Okay, Nick Littlehales, welcome to the Self-Made Mind podcast. How are you doing, pal?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Nice to join you.
Good, yeah, it's a pleasure. Yeah, we're going to get straight into this, mate. So I'd just like to say I think I represent a large number of people when I say sleep has not been a priority for me. And I've took it for granted for most of my life. So why should it be a priority for people? And why should we not take it for granted, Nick?
Well, I think there's a number of factors, really. One, you know, every generation faces different opportunities and challenges. And I think what we've seen over the last, you know, couple of decades is some pretty dynamic shifts in our own personal behavior, the 24/7 world, technology, our own sort of relationship with that 24-hour process. And I think there was a number of things that we were getting away with, you know, prior to technology really hitting the population. So we had a random approach. There's nothing too definitive about it. But we had lots of recovery opportunities in any period because we couldn't do things. We could just people watch or look at the weather or things like that. So it was a different type of world. But we've always known how important sleep is. It's a fundamental part of you being able to function as a human being. The problem with it is it's not a mental and physical activity. So you sort of go to sleep and then your brain takes over. So it's kind of like you don't always feel fully refreshed or energized from it. So it's kind of almost a perception of a bit of a waste of time when everything else that you're doing is a mental and physical activity while you're awake. So it's kind of always been that health pillar, like you say, that's been left to one side. But I think, you know, in today's world and the future, our ability to recover effectively enables us to cope with what's in front of us. So there's a lot of things that you can look at from a sleep science side, you know, rejuvenation, muscles, joints, organs, all that sort of stuff, deep sleep, REM sleep, light sleep. Yeah. You can really get into all of that science to realize why your body needs to be in that sleep state. But sometimes that creates a sort of fear factor if you struggle with sleeping because you haven't got a definitive approach. I think that's really the nub of it is not sort of looking at it to say, you know, how I can optimize it well. It's actually just for the first time maybe sitting down and working out an approach that works for you and doesn't waste valuable time sleeping without benefits, because who wants to do that? You know? So that's really my whole role in that sort of journey.
It's an important one. It seems like that we have a one-size-fits-all approach to sleep and recovery. And is that what you're saying is completely the opposite, that we have to find an individual blueprint ourselves to figure out how this works for us? Or is there anything that you would recommend that we start doing that we're not doing? You know, your traditional 8 hours sleep a night. You know, is there anything that we need to think about doing that goes against the traditional 8 hours sleeping?
I think it can be very individual because our lifestyle choices and occupational choices, they have an impact on our ability to recover. So you do have to look at the individual and identify, you know, what they're doing, how they're doing it, and use some of the basic principles that you do have to look at, you know, plus 30% of your 24 hours in a sleep state. You know, that's where the 8 comes from out of 24. But how you generate that recovery doesn't always have to be in one block. So it's a little first step for everybody is to, you know, you can tap it in your browser and realize that it wasn't that long ago, sort of before electric light, when us as humans would not even try to sleep in one long block. you know, for 8 hours. So I think, like I was saying before, it shifted where we were getting away with it, trying to sleep all at night. So you can look at what's called polyphasic sleeping, which is a combination of biphasic, triphasic, multiphasic. And that's when you're a little bit more synchronized with what's called circadian rhythms, which is principally the sun going around our planet and creating this rhythm in 24 hours. As if you're a little bit more aware of that and synchronized with it, you can actually gather your recovery in a number of phases in the day. So it's not necessarily sleeping, but it's actually creating recovery moments for your brain. And then that all builds up to when you do present yourself for a longer block, like nocturnally, it's got more chance of optimizing and revealing what you want to get from it. Mm. So it's more to do with, rather than thinking about, am I going to sleep well tonight? It's more to do what you're doing from the point of wake, you know, your anchor point, your reset point. What are you doing throughout your day that builds up an approach that helps your brain then take over when you want a longer block and develop some of the quality sleep stages? Because during any sleep period, there are different stages of sleep, which are all beneficial. But the bits that really go deep down and really replenish you and give you all the functionality for another 24-hour period, it can be easily lost because it only actually happens in a couple of cycles in every 24 hours. It's not something you can just switch on and switch off.
Right. Okay. What's a more optimal position to be in when we're asleep? You know, so, you know, do we have to think about our spine a little bit more? Is the traditional fetal position the place where we need to be? Do we need to, you know, do we need to be on our side, on our back, on our front? What do you find is the best approach to positioning?
Well, when I'm coaching, you know, professional mountaineers and they're sitting in a sack hanging off the side of a mountain, the principle is that you can sleep anywhere, anytime, in any place. That's what humans do all over our planet, right? In northern, southern hemispheres, different temperatures, different cultures, in all different ways. So that's the first premise, right? If you were trying to, you know, look at a particular position, then it's about this sort of human behavior, circadian rhythms and everything else. So if we were outside, guys, all the time, you know, we'd curl up, you know, probably around a tree or something like that, or to provide some level of security from the outside world. We'd go into a fetal position on the opposite side to your dominant side, because that leaves your dominant side to protect you. If your brain detects some sort of fear factor, noise, something like that. So you can protect yourself. If you're lying on your dominant side, then you've got your non-dominant side to protect you. So it's protecting your heart, protecting your genitals, curled up in a fetal position, with your dominant side free to protect yourself. So that's when you're looking at, you know, your environment and products, that is a gauge really when you go in choosing products, particularly like mattresses, is that you want the mattress layers to release to your natural body shape in a fetal position in that way. If it does, it keeps you nice and balanced. You mentioned the spine and joints and things. So it's not surprising that things like air and water were always considered to be the best supporting factors, because they just literally hold you without putting any pressure on you. But in general terms, we don't use water and air that much inside of mattresses. So it's all layers and springs, and they tend to sort of push you away. So it's kind of a bit pointless allocating however many hours you want, and you're lying on a surface that is constantly asking you to move and adjust, you know, pillow hugging on your front, on your back, pushing the neck up, because that's not a good a good scenario for actually allowing the brain to take you down into sleep. So that's why, you know, thinking about polyphasic sleeping is if the environment and the surfaces that we're having to sleep on is then we would look at a much shorter period of time. So we'd look at maybe a 90-minute cycle and then come out of that and be active a bit and then go back to another 90-minute cycle, because it's almost counterproductive trying to sleep for a long period of time on something that's just too hard. You know, that's the big mistake for most people. They just buy something called a mattress and one fits all. Everybody sleeps on the same thing. Mm-hmm. And then you don't correlate that back to, well, I'm not really getting good enough sleep. But like I said, I coach people to sleep anywhere, anytime, in any place. So I don't get too fussed about the product side, unless it's quite specific to a particular organization or sport.
Right. Okay. Good. Nick, I've recently read your best-selling book, Sleep.
Uh-huh. And you're still awake. Well done.
I've just woke up, actually. So
just it in is time a classic for the... little... I loved your book, Nick. I was asleep after the first paragraph.
It worked. I just found myself kind of doing that, like, mind-blown sort of action every few minutes after listening to it. Some of the information in there is just... It's priceless, as you say, and it's timeless information as well. One of the reasons I think you've written the book is to debunk common sleep myths. Uh-huh. So I'm interested to hear three of your top common sleep myths that you can debunk for us right now, if you can.
Right. Well, the big one is the myth of 8 hours. And there's no sort of argument about the time period, like I said before. Mm. But how we allocated that time was very different. You'd sleep for shorter periods, and you'd use midday and late afternoon as recovery periods. Everybody knows about the graveyard slot in business, straight after lunch, trying to hear the boss talking to you or, you know, what it is. And you're sort of drifting out of the room. Mm. There's a late afternoon little slump. So you, when you look back at it, it was really about sleeping at certain points in any 24 hours, which was really enabling you to maximize your recovery. So the first one is trying to sleep for 8 hours in one block. Just because you allocate the time doesn't mean you're going to sleep all the way through. Mm-hmm. And also, in any 8-hour period, it's the first sort of 2 or 3 hours, principally between sort of 10 o'clock at night and about 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And in that time space, in any 24 hours, as humans, that's when your brain goes looking for what's called deep sleep. Right? Mm-hmm. And the deep sleep is when you're pretty much paralyzed, you know, you're shut down completely. And that's where all the benefits come from. What you don't see is the brain doesn't go looking for that deep sleep once you get past around 2-3 o'clock in the morning. So anybody who's got sleep trackers and things like that, start worrying about the fact they don't get any deep sleep after 3 o'clock. It's because your brain's not looking for it. It's nothing to do with you. It's stopped. How many people wake up around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and can't get back to sleep and worry about it? When actually we would become active at that point, because if we've gathered the deep sleep and the rest of the other stages through, you know, 1 or 2, 3 cycles, then you've got enough. But as long as you combine that with, you know, a recovery period like 30 minutes, either midday or late afternoon, you've got a much better approach. I think the other one is because we don't, you know, it's not in our DNA to go and see a sleep coach or go to a sleep clinic or even talk to a doctor about it. So basically what you do is when things start to become a concern for you, what you do is jump into isolated solutions, right? So it's either I'll get a sleeping tablet, or I'll get that supplement, or I'll buy a new mattress, you know, or I'll get a new pillow,
yeah,
or I'll get some sort of sensory things. And that's one of the biggest myths, because in isolation, those things won't do anything. They'll just almost add things to your problems, because what you're not doing is all the other good things about it. And I think I just mentioned about sort of deep sleep gets revealed in that time frame in 24 hours. The most important period you should focus on is post-sleep. And that is, you wake up, you want to have an anchor point, as I call it, a reset point, like, you know, when you put your alarm on, which is just there for security to make sure you start your day at the right time. You will wake before then, and it's what you do in the first 60, 90 minutes of your day that then sets you up for the rest of the day, is what you're doing in every sort of cycle of the day, like we talk about 90-minute cycles. That's how you prepare yourself, that when you do want to go into a sleep state, it's everything you've been doing while you're awake. What you try and do to help you sleep, you know, in a pre-sleep mindset, it's too late. You know, you can't put right what's been going along. Some of the interventions are very good, but that's one of the biggest things, is getting yourself a new mattress and a new pillow will make things more comfortable if you've had them for many, many years. But at the end of the day, you've got to change your behavior. So, and one of the other myths, I think it is extremely important to us, but people worry about it so much, and they're thinking about how well they slept before they even start their day. Throughout the day, they're thinking about, how am I going to sleep tonight, because I've got to do it again the following day. It's not a performance criteria, so it will not stop you doing anything, right? Even if you don't sleep at all. So it's kind of, you're in this rolling mindset of worry, because you're not getting enough out of that period. So everything else that you do, whether it's nutrition, exercise, whatever you're doing throughout your day, will always be diminished, right? Because you're not recovering. And that's one of those things, is to say to somebody, stop thinking about sleep and your perception of sleep. Is change your perception to, it's a human recovery performance tool. And if you define your behavior a little bit in a very practical, achievable way, it's a very natural process. It should reveal itself every day without you even trying. And once you get to that place, you stop worrying about it. So you stop thinking about, we put a clock on the sun going around our planet. The sun doesn't give a damn about us, right? The sun creates this light, dark, and temperature shift. It creates this rolling rhythm. We're animals. We're part of that planet like everything else. And that whole process has got nothing to do with 24 hours. It's got nothing to do with Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And once you start to think about your sleep like that, you're able to have something that you're doing every day, being able to manage the positive things coming your way, being able to manage some of the negative things coming your way, because we're not in control of our days, no matter how much we think we are. And by doing that, you take all the pressure off sleep. So when you get to a place where you stop worrying about it, by default, your recovery starts to improve.
Nick, I've heard you mention about AMers and PMers.
Uh-huh.
Before, and how it's important that we choose the correct partner in our life as well, according to our AM and PM behaviors.
I've got into a lot of trouble with that sometimes, I tell you.
can you elaborate on that, and can you tell us a little bit about, you know, can we now be in a place where we can identify what we're sort of representing? Because I work as a personal trainer, sports performance coach, uh-huh. and I see a significant shift in the performance in some people, not all.
Yeah, yeah.
But later in the day, I find that most people perform better later in the day.
Mm-hmm.
On a strength and output standpoint. Yeah. You know, do you find that across the board people are generally more swaying towards PMers, or do you think it's a good split 50-50?
It's a good question. I think, you know, when you're sort of saying before, sleep's been taken for granted and these myths, and I was always fascinated by this. You know, I was aware of owls and larks. I looked into it, and there's a little sort of genetic twist to how a PMer reacts to light and a hormone called serotonin, which principally kickstarts our day with a sunrise. So I was sort of fascinated because even myself, it was very easy to say, you know, I love the mornings, you know. And I was just, I'm starving when I wake up. I can do all my business accounts and I make profit. I add everything up, everything works. As I wander through the day and get into sort of late afternoon, then it's more creative things rather than mental things that seems to be easier to do. So it's, I think it's really important. Anybody listening to this sort of, well, I'm a bit of an in-betweener. That's because when you make choices about your lifestyle or your occupation, then you have to make some adjustments. So you override it, you camouflage it, or ignore it. So in-betweeners are tending to spend most of their time in sort of limbo, neither here nor there. I think there's no sort of specific research, but pretty much every group that I've been coaching over a couple of decades or so, there is definitely more PMers in the room, you know?
Yeah.
I think so. I would take a pretty, pretty good stab. It's probably 70-30.
Right.
In a PM away. And I think it's good to understand that, or at least take that on board, because we all live in an AMers world.
Yeah.
So as you as a coach, which is great, but those kind of conversations were never cropping up. They've only been cropping up recently, haven't they?
Yeah, well, I had this last week with a client who she were adamant that she wanted to start a day the positive way, the right way. You know, getting up early, coming to do her coaching session, get it out of the way kind of thing. But her performance weren't there. Her body wasn't woken up, and she just wanted to talk more and learn more things through education rather than applying it. So it got to a point where we're like, right, we need to work now. We've got to get to work. Otherwise, we're just going to talk all day about it and there's no action. And it was like she wasn't ready to do it. And one particular day, she's yawning, lackluster. And I said, like, a little bit heated as well. I was like, if you don't wake up and sort yourself out within the next 5 minutes, you need to go home and go back to bed. And which she was kind of like, oh, right, okay, and then, like, springed into action. But I didn't actually understand the importance of an AMer and a PMer, and she's just clearly a PMer. So I suggested at that point, after, you know, doing a bit of research into yourself, I don't think you're training at the right time.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything to do with like, your lackluster approach as such. I just think you're choosing the wrong slot of the day to try and do it. We're yet to see the long-term results of that. But just from that one thing has massively helped me.
It's how you say why, when you start to look into these little things and you just go, well, you know, I can't change everything and I can't do everything in a perfect way. But what I do know is that if I'm an AMer and I've been up early like I always am and I've been active and everything else, I know that my relationship with late afternoon is going to be more of a, you know, it's not so active period for me. But if I know that, then when I arrive at the gym to see you, right, I get there 30 minutes earlier and I'll take a vacant mind space moment in the car or in the changing room, a nap, I call them controlled recovery period, a little micro sleep, a little phase out because I've got the time there to just give myself the opportunity to come into your session, you know, to get the best out of it, because I know it's that. It's the same for a PMer coming to, you know, wants to get a session in before they go to work. And it all makes sense, doesn't it? But what they're doing is pushing themselves too much unless they shift their anchor point a full cycle before I'm coming to see you. Gives me an opportunity to get plenty of light, to get the serotonin levels up, to get everything functional. So when I get to you, I've done something that is helping my chronotype, because I want to do something at a particular time, or somebody's asking you to do something at a particular time. And it's those little things that you wouldn't think at all is going to have an impact on your sleep. Yeah. But it does, because you're putting your brain, which is an amazing organ, constantly adapting and adjusting. But if you're always putting it under constantly adapting and adjusting all the time, then you're going to get to a point, whether you call it burnout or whatever, where you just start, you know, you're dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, there's so many aspects of it that it can be an absolute, you know, using that word, game changer for somebody. Because you start to see the data, don't you? When they're on the treadmill, or when they're doing this, or how much they're how much weight they're lifting, how many reps they can do, how they are after so many reps and things like that, or how many lengths of the pool they can swim, is it suddenly it just becomes easier to achieve those markers. And the last thing you want in anything that you're doing is if your mood and motivation levels just drop a little bit, there's that wonderful thing that comes running out of our back pocket called excuses. And once we start to create those things, it's I can't get to that session because a meeting's gone on too long, or there's a traffic jam, or it's all rubbish. You know, we create these little things because basically our mood and motivation has just dropped. It's diminished a bit, so we just don't get there. And when we're there, we make excuses for other things. And it's absolutely amazing. And it's great to hear you, because there's a lot more coaches and personal trainers and everything else really sort of taking this on board, because they get far more out of their clients. And sometimes I've heard it that, you know, they will actually reduce the session. You know, maybe it's a 60-minute session for them, is have 10 minutes recovery activity before or after the rest of the activity, rather than blasting it for 6 minutes, is actually thinking about the recovery aspect of everything that we're doing gets you better results.
Yeah. I think it's easier to handle that way as well, you know, rather than thinking everything's a mountain of a task, you know, with everything else that we're trying to spin in life and all the different hats that we have to wear. It can be exhausting. So when you're actually thinking that you're going to get a little Brucey bonus recovery thrown in here and there, I guess it's easier to manage.
Yeah. And it's sort of, you wouldn't think that inside, anybody who likes cycling, you wouldn't think inside of a peloton, which is all the riders together, while they're going on their sort of 200K ride, and they do it day after day. And inside the peloton, there's certain members of the team doing certain things at certain times. And that is sort of, if you're inside a peloton, you can actually almost be not pedaling because you're just being dragged along by the peloton. So that's a recovery moment. So you wouldn't think, I hate using the word nap, but you wouldn't think that a controlled recovery period could actually be inside a peloton on a bike moving at 40K. Right? 25, 30K. You wouldn't think like that. But it is these little things that you start to pick up on about how you can get so much more out of once you start to put recovery as a major mental and physical activity that is as important, if not more important, to being able to achieve what you want to achieve. Yeah. And I'd like everybody to think that if they sort of think, you know, if I'm going to be active for 60 minutes, then I want to be inactive for 10 or 15 minutes. And I don't mean doing nothing. It's just because that combines together that gets me better results, more sustainable, more achievable, less injuries, less other problems along the route. Because I'm incorporating that into my everyday.
So all these motivational coaches and speakers that are saying you've got to hustle and grind and get up at 4 a.m. and you've got to, you know, have limited sleep and things like that. Mm-hmm. Is, well, I'm guessing you're saying right now, is massively counterproductive to your long-term success and in business and in any sort of performance.
I think so, because you know, just look at the almost non-human statistics that are coming out all the time, whether it's under the mental health and well-being banner, or whether it's burnout, whether it's addictive behaviours. You know, we're not doing that well, are we, in the scheme of things?
No.
So, you know, I think it's a really good point that if you know, both of you, that if we just step outside and sit on a bench and look at the trees, or we're by a river or by the coast, whatever it is, just outside, and we sit there for nothing more than 5 minutes or so, what happens is, because your brain is visualizing something that's about calm, that's about nature, that's about, you know, hasn't really got anything to do with anything other than you're a human being on a planet, and don't forget that, right? Never mind whatever you do, don't forget that. You're just a human being with functions. In a very short space of time, we would look at each other and go, life's not really that bad, is it, guys? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like when we go camping. It's like when we go out into the mountains, when we have a break from everything else, and just looking at the sun and the trees just for a few minutes means I'm processing different information that creates different feelings than when I'm trying to deal with chaos or problems or concentrate or focus.
Mm.
So you wouldn't think that if you just sat for 10 minutes, you know, with a towel over your head in the changing room, right? Or you were sat in your car, or you just sat outside before you go into the gym and just allow that to happen. What you're not doing is taking all that crap. You're taking that into your sessions.
Yeah.
So instead of actually focused on what the coach wants you to do and focus on your technique and focus on your breathing and focus on this, you're thinking about all that rubbish in your head. So you sort of go, well, how would that benefit me? Well, try it, because you will suddenly see a completely different you.
Yeah.
And very quickly, when you see a bunch of athletes, and they're all at their peak, they're all PBing for fun, and it's a 100-meter sprint. And why does one of them just get to that line slightly quicker than the rest of them, right? And that's because they have been looking after their approach to recovery, and means they probably had more time training because they were not so many injuries or strains and things like that. They were able to apply their training in a more defined way, which you touched on. And that means they were able to deliver. And that's the difference for anybody listening to this. And I deal with a lot of people who do crazy, crazy things, you know, in sport and life, is that if you just take that little bit of time out, and everyone said, well, what do you mean, Nick? Well, maybe we can highlight that or something. There is a person that you don't know, you don't think exists. But when you sort of put it in context, that actually you are simply a diminished shadow of actually who you could be.
Mm.
Right. And it's because you don't meet them.
Yeah. Huh? Ouch.
You don't think that it's there, but that's the difference.
Mm.
That's the difference. That's the only reason I've been successful, in my crazy approach is picking up all these tiny little things and aggregating them together, and suddenly you start to see performance levels that they thought they could never achieve. Mm. And I mean performance levels is they smile 15 times a day instead of 5. You know, they're happier more often. Their diet, everything about it, their relationships with others around them is a much more improved type of environment to work in. So performance comes in all different ways.
Mm. Boom. That was a big one.
That struck hard. Yeah. I think a lot of us
absolute mic drop that one.
Yeah. I think a lot of us just go through life and just don't achieve anywhere near to what we're capable of. So that's just a nice little reminder that we are capable.
If you know, sometimes when you know, a lot of the times I'm either talking to sports science professionals, I'm talking to medics, I'm talking to coaches, managers in all sorts of different areas. But in a lot of times you're trying to change somebody's perception of it, right? And when you're trying to change their perception, like, you know better than me about coaching, but, you know, if you want somebody to go and do something, don't tell them to go and do it. You send them off on a little path, turning left and turning right, and then they suddenly end up there. And they go, oh, wow, I didn't realize that, but now I can feel it, you know, rather than don't doing it. And I think if you think that our brains, apparently we only use 10% of it, whatever, right? There is 3% of every day if you're thinking 8 hours. And there's a bit beforehand and a bit after, so it could easily be, you know, allocating time to sleep could be 9 or 10 hours, right? You don't do anything in any day. Anything in any day that is consistent taking up 8 hours. So if there's 30% of your day rolling 365, 30% of it, surely we could all jump in there and find ourselves a little 5% or a little 10%, or for some, maybe a bit more significant. So it's kind of looking at it, how can I get more positive benefits out of this time that I'm doing when I'm actually asleep? Mm. And that means focusing on what you do while you're awake, because that helps your brain go and get the good stuff, and that's what you want it to do. Mm. So it's once you start that sort of thought process, it becomes really exciting.
I think it's the self-awareness as well, isn't it? You know, to actually think to yourself, you know, where am I putting my energy? Where am I putting my thoughts? What am I doing? What am I saying yes to? What do I not have any boundaries over? You know, I'm thinking of mothers here as well with children, you know, they give everything and more, and they leave themselves on the side. And I'm thinking of those sorts of people when you say that. And it's not then having the self-awareness to think, I'll actually be a better mother, father, whatever. Whatever it is you're trying to be better at, you'll be better at it if you take these, you know, mindful decisions of recovering better.
I think what you do is you go, you know, there are these health pillars, we're aware of them. You know, we know about our diets and 5 a day and whatever, you know, nutritional plan that you adopt. We know about exercise. And we know about the importance of even taking a 30-minute walk and everything else. So we're... and hydration and everything else. So we're very aware of these things. But if you're trying to achieve those things in the best way you possibly can, but then this other health pillar, you're just tagging on to the end of it without any thought, completely taken for granted, then why would you expect any of those other things to be actually doing what they should be doing for you when you're not even doing that? So if my challenge always is to make it your first health pillar, right? And you put your approach to this recovery process first. When you do that, everything else you do is going to be more productive, more beneficial, more sustainable, and probably a longer life, right? Or being able to achieve what you want. You know as well as I, you know, elite athletes are not really bothered about the future. They just want to smash it this weekend or at a final or at a trial. That's where their goal is, because that's what they're focused on. And that's how we should all think about this process, is just stop thinking about sleep in the perceived way that you think it is. And once you get to that place, it's amazing.
So do you feel we need to set bigger goals in order to then have the correct recovery in mind? Because if we're not, I guess the recovery wouldn't come as part of an essential way of being if the goal's not there initially. Obviously, now relating it back to elite athletes, do you suggest that we have bigger goals, which means that we have to get our, should I say, shit in order to then think, right, I need to recover? You know, is that kind of what you're alluding to?
Most people would consider it, you know, it's like snoozers for losers. It's like, you know, sleep when you're dead and all that sort of stuff. Well, that's fine if you look at sleep like that, but I don't look at sleep like that. I see it as a high performance recovery tool, right? And if I approach it like that, I'm going to be quicker and faster than you at everything, right? In principle, right? And once you get there, it's not a waste of time, right? A waste of time is just tagging it on the end of your day and keeping your fingers crossed. That's a waste of time. That's like going to the gym and looking at the treadmill. You know? Yeah. It's like, what's the point? And so I think what I started to do was, I knew that in a clinical environment, sleep was measured in a 90-minute cycle. And that meant that during that 90-minute period, you could see all the various sleep stages being developed. And then they would look at the next 90 minutes and benchmark it. So five 90-minute cycles is 7.5 hours. There's your sort of eight-hour block, but it's five 90-minute cycles, right? You then know that in the first two cycles is where your brain's going to go looking for this deep sleep. Now, this deep sleep's amazing, right? It's like, it's so powerful that you want it, but it's only 20% of any period that you sleep. So it's kind of, the focus shifts to, you've got five cycles in any 24 hours, 7.5 hours, five 90-minute cycles. You then start to think the first two cycles are key. Not all five, the first two are key. So how I go into that, what my brain does in those two periods gets me to about mid-morning. Remember that. It's not nighttime. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. That means you're getting ready to wake up, right? So that's sort of, you know, look at the, you said parents and pilots and surgeons, and our world today doesn't have this relationship anymore. And it never did. So suddenly you go, well, it's really important then for me to have an anchor point, right? This is creating my sunrise, right? What's that about? Because if I was outside, the sun would rise. Inside of daylight, there's blue light, a natural energy wave. That would trigger through our light receptors in a little gland called the pineal gland, and that would produce a hormone called serotonin. And serotonin tells your brain to be fully functional, unsuppress absolutely everything, right? So off you go. When you move out of blue light and daylight, like sunset, you're then in diminished light. And that's not dark, it's just diminished light. And that means that same gland produces melatonin. And melatonin tells the brain to suppress functions, right? Now, if you want to get a sort of better rhythm and a better understanding to your overall performance, you need to create your sunrise. And we don't sleep outside, we sleep inside. So you need this. For example, I'm a AMer, so my anchor point is 6:30. I like to think on the hour or half an hour, because it doesn't mean I need anything to remember it. So my anchor point is 6:30. I chop the day up into 90-minute cycles. So you get 16 90-minute cycles, right? And that takes you from the first cycle of your day between 6:30 and 8, right the way round to the final cycle, which is between 5 and 6:30. So the 16th cycle is my wake cycle, is when I wake up and switch the alarm off and start my day. The first cycle is all about light, big time, to get everything functioning, to get everything going, appetite, bowel and bladder, little mental challenges, bringing you into the day. Every 90 minutes, I think of a little CRP, you know, and that's just look out the window for 2 minutes. That's all it is. Or I've got a hydration bottle on my desk. I only half fill it because I get up and go and half fill it again. You know what I mean? I'm constantly aware that in every 90 minutes of my day, that's what I do in the first cycle. In the second, third, and fourth, I'm making sure that I'm allocating tiny little controlled recovery periods, you know, little vacant mind spaces, just getting that little break.
I spend my life in that vacant mind space.
Yeah.
I stared out the window at school all the time.
Exactly. And because I'm aware of polyphasic sleeping, then I have a 30-minute cycle, which is 30% of 90, 8 hours, 30% of 24. It all adds up. That's what you call a nap period. But I always allocate 30 minutes late afternoon for me. And sometimes I'll microsleep. Sometimes I won't. Sometimes I'm not even trying to sleep. But it's just giving that your brain the opportunity. It can put you asleep behind the wheel of a car on a motorway. What's all that about? That's nuts.
Yeah.
So you kind of like, if I've got some rhythm, then me and my brain have got better opportunity. Oh, we're going to microsleep in that 30 minutes. Fine, well, I'll just sit here and do it. Boom. You know? Or I might sit on the sofa. Or I might sit on a bench. I don't have to go to bed. I can do it anywhere. So that little 30 minutes there takes the pressure off. If you think about four phases of the day, so sunrise, midday, sunset, into midnight. So that little 30 minutes helps me and my brain go into phase three. And that's the evening. And I want to have an unrushed evening. I want to be able to, you know, cook my own food. I want to be able to eat well. I want to maybe go to the gym. I maybe want to have some social activity with my partner or something else, because that's my time. You know, for most people, that's what you've been working for, is to create that bit of sweat. I don't want to be rushing around crazy, just thinking, oh, there's only 30, I've got to go to sleep to get my 8 hours. I've got to do this. So I completely shift it and say, instead of looking at 5 90-minute cycles, which would be between 11 and 6:30, okay, is I start thinking about going into my sleep would be from 9:30 onwards, okay, to be ready to sleep at 11. Now, hang on a minute. I live in a 24/7 world. I don't want to be thinking like that. So what I do is I choose 12:30. That's the next cycle along, from 11 to 12:30 into 2, 3:30 into 5, into 6:30. So between 12:30 and 6:30 is 4 cycles and 6 hours, right? But because I'm taking the pressure off that third phase, it means when I get to that particular point, I'm highly likely my brain just goes into that one, the first cycle, goes and grabs that deep sleep, and then we just roll through the other and just come out of it. It means that my bowel and my bladder has got more time before I go to sleep. It means all of the pressures and the thoughts and all the stuffs and the emails and the, you know, everything that we've got to do and social media is more time for it to happen. So my pre-sleep doesn't start until 11. Now everybody's going, but that's too late. I said, well, no. See, I'm getting more time for me in my day. I'm improving the way I recover. And it's not taking up any more time. I'm still getting all the value. And I stop worrying about it. And in particular, you know, the sun's coming in here. Amazing, isn't it? You're just about to move out of this seasonal, effective, let's do nothing period of time, winter, when it's dark at 4 o'clock. We're going to be switching the clocks forward soon, right? We're going to change the clocks again. And so suddenly it's like this at 10 o'clock at night. So you come out of this period where it's dark at 4 o'clock, and then suddenly it's light at 10 o'clock, and your behavior shifts, doesn't it? So what I'm trying to say in a sort of roundabout way, I've structured the way I approach every 24 hours, and this is what I coach, that enables me to go through the seasons enables me to deal with, you know, going out bike riding at 9 o'clock at night, or meeting up with friends, or going to the cinema, or having spacing time so I can buy some fresh food and cook it myself, to maybe learn some more chords on the guitar, maybe do some exercise at the gym that I wouldn't normally do because I ain't got time. You know, what it does is it creates all that space. And as I move from the winter months into spring, into summer, into autumn, into winter, the impact of those seasonal changes and things like daylight saving time shifts, which only happens in certain countries, we should get rid of it, is what I'm doing is not allowing some of the things that are around me impact, try to minimize their impact as much as possible. Because the more I actually go about my day understanding these key factors, my brain and I will suddenly start to sort of change everything that we do, because I'm not focusing it. So it's, you know, anchor point, 16 cycles. What are you doing in every cycle? Think about, you could do, you know, 4 90-minute cycles back to back nocturnally. Think about when schedules change. So you know what it's like. You look at somebody. So what you end up doing is you say, well, here's the next 7 days in front of me. So basically you start thinking 35 cycles in a week, you know, 5 a day. You start thinking, how does that structure itself? Well, for me, it's 28 back-to-back 90-minute cycles combined with 7 30-minute cycles late afternoon, combined with 42 tiny little couple of minute CRPs, like six in every 20. So immediately what I'm doing is I'm talking to my coach about what works best for that individual, which was one of your questions before, wasn't it? Mm. What works best for that individual? You take their chronotype, you make them aware of circadian rhythms and how we should be synchronized. Desynchronized means counterproductive. How we can adjust it a little bit, and how we can maximize that rolling 24 hours so we can find out which combination works. Because in elite sport and life, and you mentioned parents, suddenly you might find a period of time when that's put under pressure. So the coaches love it because they can actually look at the week and they've got training days, they've got this and they've got that, and they've got events and things like that. And they can actually see where the recovery cycles are because they're thinking differently. And they can actually give it to the individual athletes and go, here's where your cycles are available. And you're normally doing this. So when you get in at 2 o'clock in the morning after that late game, right? So this is not 11 o'clock and your 5 cycles. This is not 4 cycles and 12:30. When you get in at 2 o'clock in the morning, don't try and go to sleep, right? Stay awake, because that's pre-sleep, right? You need to bring everything down, bowel and bladder, stop. Bring it all down and then go into 3:30. And you'll go 3:30 into 6:30. And those two cycles will be maximized, right? And then you think about keeping your sleep. And then maybe we put a 30-minute cycle in midday to balance that shift, along with your 30-minute cycle late afternoon. So suddenly you start to, within a structure that you can very easily subconsciously, I don't care if you ring me up, you know, in 20 minutes time and say, you know, do you want to come bike riding tonight at 8 o'clock? And I go, whoa, no, I've got to get, that means I won't be able to eat when I get back. And then I've got to get to bed and I've got to get my 8 hours. I just go, absolutely fine, I'm coming, right? Because I've got my little 30 minutes in today, right? After this, I know that's already there. That's what I do all the time. I know I can come out riding with you. I know I can eat after it because I just shift it. I just shift it and say, I'm going for 3 cycles, right? But I know what to do and I know what I'm doing. So stop worrying about whether I get any benefit, because already I've just gone, I'll have 20 minutes tomorrow afternoon as well as my 30-minute one. Right? So immediately you take more advantage of your time. You take more advantage of the positive things that come your way, and excuses become a thing of the past. You just start being so much more productive and proactive. Yeah. You know, you really, really do. And I could have answered a lot of your questions probably quicker, with more clarity, where everybody understands it better. But I'm trying to exaggerate a point that I'm trying to do something late afternoon, right? And it means things just take longer. You don't notice it, but they just take longer. You try to manipulate things around it, and you really don't want to be living your life like that.
That is the true education as well, isn't it, Nick? You know, that's where you don't just get a nugget of information and then run with it and it changes your life. You've got to understand it, and how you've just broke that down there really solidifies how we can perform better. So that were...
Well, I'd say there's a quick one, if you've got time. I mean, I think lots of people are talking about it now, but I started doing this with young athletes a long time ago. And it's kind of like a bit of fun, but it's certainly, you know, in that first step of changing somebody's perception. So I just get a little light meter off the App Store on my phone. It's just a little Lux light meter. It shows me that where I'm sat here right now, it's 185 lux, which is lumens, how you measure light. And I'm sat here, it's pretty sunny and bright. And if I just put that by the window, which is an arm's length away, it's now shot up to nearly 4,500. That's less than a meter from where I'm sat. If I took it outside, even now at this time of day, it could be 60,000-70,000 lux, just the other side of that glass, right? And what you know is that our relationship with light and diminished light is that means while I'm sat here talking to you for this hour, I am in such low level of light that my little pineal gland is producing melatonin. And melatonin is trying to tell my brain to suppress me, okay? Now, if I make sure that I keep topping those levels of light up, whether it's standing by a window or stepping outside or even having a little daylight lamp, you know, on my desk, you know, just switch it on every now and again. These are all CRPs. What I do is keep the serotonin levels up in the first phases of the day, and then I'm able to understand what diminished light and melatonin is about when you move into phase three, right? So you suddenly get a much better relationship. And If you've not done it already, guys, take it into the gym. You wander around all your environments, and you're sort of, even the local council gym where I go to, because it's great and it's cheap and it's brilliant, right? And the personal trainers in there, you know, the sort of air quality is not terribly great, certainly not like outside, but also the lights in there. Right. And I'm wandering around with my little light meter going, it's not surprising that after a short period of time inside that gym, I'm actually feeling quite fatigued. Why? It's because the level of light and the blue light and all of that stuff is just making you try, your brain's trying to suppress you when you're trying to be active. So I've seen CrossFit gyms, we change all the lamps, change all the bulbs. And suddenly you've got people running along like mad and feeling really active and positive and smiling about what they're doing rather than sort of like, oh, God, another set of reps.
Right.
Another kilometer on the bike. You know, so it's, you would kind of think it's a bit nuts. But the personal trainer who I do some stuff with at my local gym, he's now got a portable lamp and it, and where he's training, doing the weights and everything, when he's personally training himself, he takes the lamp out and just sits it by the side of him while he's doing his stuff. Because he's already knows that he wants, you know, these 90-minute cycles. If you were outside, it could be 100,000 lux, okay? And inside is this blue light. On average, we see around 10,000 lux for humans in the first two phases. So you're out there maybe in up to 80, 90,000 lux. You're moving around. So your average exposure, because of the light receptors, could be around 10,000 lux, right, over that period of time. So if you think 1,000 lux in every 90 minutes as an average, right, an average, and I've been talking to you for over an hour now, sat in 200 lux, right, that means I need to step outside, put my lamp on, or do something to get that serotonin level back up again, right? So you start to get a real relationship with, if you're going to really function at your best, at least get a relationship with light and two very key hormones, because that can be an absolute game changer to you. You know, with the PMers and the AMers, little things that they might do, you know, which piece of equipment are you going to use in the gym? Well, I always go straight for the ones by the windows. You know what I mean? Yeah. If you could. But it is a little bit like, I'm smashing it. And say, well, yeah. But if the light was right in here, you'd probably be doing it. You'd probably be doing the same, but with less strain. Mm. You know? Yeah. You'd be doing it easier. It would feel
that's information that I've not ever taken into consideration.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that.
Well, even whether you sort of say, well, that's, you know, anybody who knows a lot about light and all this, it's not a question. You can have light meters. It's not quite, it's just basically a piece of awareness that we can all relate to. We don't have to be too specific about it, but we know what it feels like outside. If we then know about light levels and blue light, which is a really positive thing, not a negative thing, put your blue blockers on and protect you at night and all that sort of stuff. If you know that's what happens when you stand outside, that you start producing this hormone, and that hormone makes you happy, your mood, your motivation, everything about you is in the right balance. The other one's trying to do the opposite. So once you can find in your world, now I don't even have to use that light meter anymore. It's just a little bit of awareness, because I know what it's like outside. I know what it's like by a window. I know what it's like in an environment like this. I know the levels of light, so I'm very conscious of it, you know? Yeah. So never mind you trying to coach somebody who's an AM and a PM at a certain point in the day. You know, I'd be very conscious as an AM. I do not go to the gym late afternoon unless I've, you know, prepare myself to do that. I go in the swimming pool late afternoon because they've got windows everywhere and the kind of light levels in there are much brighter than the gym. So I'm very conscious of, you know, doing things in environments at the right time, the right places. And it changes. I walk up to a building and I will know that I've got to get from A to B, but I'll turn right, not left. Everybody goes left. Why do I turn right? It's because that's where all the windows are. And while I'm walking down that corridor, I know I'm getting hit with maybe 4,000 or 5,000 lux, which is just keeping my levels of serotonin up, you know? So sometimes coaching is not about, it's not about telling lies. It's not about making things up, but trying to change somebody's behavior is brilliant if you've got the right approach.
Basically, all these new gym owners that are setting their gyms up like discos, they need to stop right now, basically, because what you're saying. Because I've seen some gyms, including one of the ones that I've worked at recently, and it is just geared up like a nightclub. It's like you've walked into a nightclub in Manchester, it's strobe lighting, mood lighting, every other kind of lighting than the kind that we need. Mm. So for all the new gym owners that think it's a swanky way, I don't think it's the way, is it? Is what you're saying?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm a bit old school maybe, but, you know, join the gym in January, leave it in March. It's sort of that whole business of maintaining what you want to do, keeping those mood levels up, doing things that keeps you consistent. So it's not just short term. If you go into that environment and all that environment's trying to do is shut you down, not liven you up with the strobe lighting and all that sort of stuff and everything else, then you really are wasting your time. And then suddenly you think, I don't like going there anymore. Why? Because I feel knackered. The PT guys at the gym, this is, you know, I come in here every day and I'm training people, I'm doing my own training. But God, it's sort of, I feel so lethargic. You know what I mean?
And it's sort of like, effect it's meant to.
Why is that? Why is that? It's because of that. It's as simple as that. You know, you come from the outside, you've woke up in the morning, you you've had a bit of time outside coming to work to the gym. You come inside the gym, and within a sort of an hour, your hormone levels have shifted.
Mm.
And now it's taking a bit of a struggle to get through the day, you know?
Yeah.
And nobody puts that down to anything. But that's what I was saying before. There's no point. You know, pre-sleep things is all about light to dark and warm to cool, right? That's it. The rest of the things you do could help as little interventions. But if you've just started your day without any of these little tiny things going on and everything else, then you're wasting valuable time at night.
Yeah.
She's sleeping without some of the real benefits. And that just goes on. And then you start thinking about melatonin supplements. Then you start thinking about sleeping tablets. You can get them online without prescription. You start thinking about snores. You start thinking about all sorts of things. Suddenly you find yourself in quite an addictive behavioral mindset. And when that starts to kick in, it's a slippery road, isn't it?
Yeah,
so I think that's why you shouldn't take it for granted, because at the end of your fingertips, you've got access to absolutely anything you want without any rules or regulations, right? So you can go down some right old rabbit holes, right? And so, oh, sleeping tablets, order them. They come in a box. Where was the medic? Where was the person who stops it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, is that you can't take this for granted in our generation. You just can't, because it's too dangerous. It's too dangerous. There's so many things that will impact on you now that weren't around before. So I don't want to give anybody a fear factor. It's absolutely so simple.
Yeah,
it's so simple to redefine your approach. It's practical, achievable. You don't have to invest anything in it. And when you do it, you've got it for the rest of your life, because you're going to be a human on this planet, and those two things ain't going to change. Everything else can, but those two things never will.
Nice. I think that's the great thing about...
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I think that's the great thing about your messages, Nick. It's simple, actionable, you know, life lessons that you can implement straight away that's going to have a massive effect. And that's just... you've completely changed my perception on a lot of things. And Dan, I think you're the same. And hopefully for people listening, I feel like we've just scratched the surface, Nick. I think that's a frustrating thing.
I mean, you know, you've listened to the book, obviously. I mean, it is not science. It's not shouting at you. It's not telling you what to do. It's a little story, you know, and inside of there, I think the majority of people who read it sort of immediately want to give it to somebody else in their life, or you know. So I've probably not sold as many books as I sold. I think somebody was saying the other day, I've given that book to one friend, they gave it to somebody else. It's passed on through about, you know, 50 people. So I missed out on 50 book sales because they just passed it around.
Be an old haggard thing by the end of it, won't it?
Yeah, and they just go, you know, to be honest with you, when I read it, I thought, I kind of know all that. I kind of thought that I knew this, but I didn't, because it just sounds so ridiculously obvious and simple and straightforward. And it's quite amazing why we don't. Well, some of my clients have been taking it on board for a long time, and they keep smashing it all the time. I won't mention their names, but, you know, they've been doing things like this for a long time, you know.
I think it's going to change a few things for me.
Yeah,
for sure.
100%.
I think that sort of Generation Z, whatever we call it, they call them, you know, whatever it is, we keep coming up with these buzzwords. I think for, you know, what I really have seen quite a significant shift is that, you know, I've always coached at different academy levels, but there are individual athletes, you know, 16, 17, 18, who are not coming to me because they've got problems with sleep, right? They probably have got problems with sleep because they don't do it properly. But what they're coming to me is, this is as important to be successful, because your ability to recover in the modern world is very difficult, really difficult. And so they need to have an approach that helps protect them. Otherwise, they can forget their career because they won't handle it. You know, they just won't handle it as all of those things sort of crank up.
Yeah. I think the younger you can take on this information, the better. And I hope everyone that's listened, I hope you've taken notes as well. It's been an absolute pleasure, mate. And like I say, I think you've definitely changed our perception, and I hope people who are listening think the same, pal. And where can people contact you or find out about more of your work if you want to let us know about that?
You know, at Sport Sleep Coach, Sport OS, Sport Sleep Coach. Yeah, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, that sort of place. Sportsleepcoach.com is the website. It's got lots of podcasts you can access, and this one when it goes up, no doubt.
Nice.
We've got lots of blogs, and you've got some nice, easy steps, you know, to get yourself going without going too far. Like, you can read the book, get one off Amazon reused for a few quid. You can read and listen to the book. There's a little Audible course on there, you know, under 20 quid. So you can just listen to something, me taking you through some steps. And we've got some coaching services on there. And if you did step into those particular areas, it's just a one-off coaching session that sorts you for the rest of your life. We're not going at it every day. We just have a particular session. We redefine your approach and bang, you're done for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those are the sort of places to go. But
and please get the book. Please get the book, guys.
I think, to be honest, I've just got a very, very big organization in the UK who we all would like to think we can trust and protect us. I say no more. 180,000 books is potentially going to be handed out to everybody. Right? Because it's one of the easiest steps to take.
Yeah.
It's just, I think once you make that step, it's great. But yeah, it's not a books. I'm not promoting books.
That's all right. We'll do that for you.
Yeah, we'll do that. And we'll do it in the intro as well.
Yeah.
So thank you for your time, Nick. We really appreciate it. And the education, you've absolutely changed a massive thing that I preconceived about sleeping. Your traditional 8 hours is obviously not what we need. So I appreciate the education and your time. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, sleep when you're dead, turn it around, you know?
Yeah.
change that.
Yeah. That's just sleep. Before there, Nick, sorry, I mentioned this chat to a friend before, and I mentioned he's a sleep expert, and his reply was, sleep when you're dead.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll end it on that, and hopefully that after he listens to this, he won't be saying that anymore.
No, well, no. He's probably in the equivalent of feeling a bit dead most days. Not as good. Might be shortening his life a bit. But anyway, hopefully if he's listened to this, his perception of it, just think about people who do amazing things, physical things, you know, triathletes, Ironmans, all sorts of things, extreme sports, I mean, massive challenges, whatever it is and everything else. And they don't do that by thinking like that.
No, that's exactly true. So, yeah.
Thank you, mate. That's been awesome.
Yeah. No problem. Thanks for your time, and keep doing the good work, mate. And hopefully we'll speak again soon sometime.
Yeah, maybe we'll bump into each other someplace.
No doubt.
Thank you.
All right, Nick. Thanks.
Bye, guys. Thanks a lot.
Cheers.
Take care, mate. Thank you.
Take care.
Cheers, now.
Thanks for listening to another inspiring self-made story. And we hope you enjoyed the show. We would be very grateful if you could kindly leave us a review, as it will help us impact a wider audience. You can do this on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. If you want to reach out on the socials, find us across all platforms using @theselfmademinds podcast. See you next time, and happy success making.